It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 359 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, I get to speak with Ben Rankle, creator of a wonderful graphic novel called Frank. It's a story about a place in Canada that may not be with us any longer, which is something of a surprise. But we get to meet some special characters, and we get to find out some really interesting history, and we get to explore an actual event and what kind of things took place there. Ben is both the writer and the artist, and he does a wonderful job in both aspects bringing this to life. We talk about where the story came from, we talk about the characters, we talk about his storytelling abilities, and what kinds of things we can expect from him in the future as well. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. It's great to talk with Ben Rankle, the creator of Frank, which is this great graphic novel. I love my Long John stuff, but every once in a while I want something different. And your book is something different, which I really liked, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing great, Wayne. Thank you very much for speaking with me this evening.
It's good stuff. And it's from Renegade Arts Entertainment, a company I've long admired and thought does wonderful things. And, of course, when you hear the name Frank, I'm sure some people like me are going to think this is the name of a male or a man somewhere, but it's not. Why don't you tell people what Frank is?
Well, it's kind of true. It is the name of a man. The man's name was Henry Frank, and he was a American businessman who came up into Canada, southern Alberta, in the early 1900s and started the town of Frank, which is what the book is actually named after. Mm-hmm. So he named a town after himself.
Well, people, if you got enough money, I guess you can do that kind of thing.
And that's exactly what happened here. He had enough money, so he just moved in and started a new town so that he could mine for coal.
Wow. Well, why don't I read the description on the back of the book as I got to read it. It says, a historical mystery set in the tragedy of the Frank Slide, one of Canada's deadliest natural disasters. Eve Lee is a self-destructive spiral. Is in a self-destructive spiral. Her big plans for a new life and Frank have not turned out how she planned. As Eve hits rock bottom, she's forced to confront her expectations when her former lover disappears under questionable circumstances. But is there something sinister at play, or is she simply being obsessive and self-centered? And will she be able to put her past behind her before she finds herself buried under it? Or something else, maybe. So that's the description for it, Ben. Now, you are the artist and the writer, right?
Yeah. Wow. That's an interesting bit of work.
Yeah, that must have taken you a little while to do all those good things. It's historical, so did you do research? Is that where the concept came from?
Yeah, it's definitely rooted in history and local history for me. The province that I live in Canada is Alberta. I live about an hour north of where Frank used to be. It's no longer a town. It's kind of been incorporated into the other municipalities in the area now. But I used to drive through there as a kid. Mm-hmm. So, wow, I did it already. I just completely lost where I was going with that.
Well, you're drawn through. You used to go through that town where or the place that is no longer there when you were a child, you were saying.
Yeah. My dad used to drive us out to British Columbia, which is a province to the west of us here. And that's where my grandparents live. So we used to go through the Frank site at least once a year. Mm-hmm. My dad wasn't really much for storytelling, so when I'd ask him what happened, he'd say a very succinct sort of like, well, the mountain fell on the town.
Oh.
And he kind of left me to imagine the rest of what happened there, and that's kind of what I did.
So it inspired you to do some research at some point.
Yeah, and so when I hit this project, I you know, I had to go and fill in all that stuff that I'd made up for myself in the past, and then It was a lot of like field trips to the site, visiting different museums and checking out archives of photos and stuff like that. But then also realizing through that process that I really wanted to do something that wasn't exactly historical. Mm-hmm. And that's where the murder mystery comes in.
Mm-hmm. Which is good. You know, it's great to have something a little different. You know, I like crime noir. I like any kind of a mystery that just appeals to me. And that's what this one was. There's a lot of things going on that we have to pay attention to so that we can figure out what's happening when we get towards the end and things start to happen. So I really liked the way that you told the story. I thought, okay. You know, it had lots of good pace to it. There's music involved in it along the way too, which I enjoyed. And, you know, you get to see some of the people back in the day when this happened, and you get to see that not everybody ends up well, which is one of the great parts of the story. You just don't know what's going to happen next, which I like.
Well, thank you very much. It was an interesting process for me, being the first large bit of comic work that I did, and definitely the first thing I tried to do over 10 pages.
Oh, wow. So you this is your first comic work, you're saying?
Yeah.
Wow.
I put myself into the deep end. Up to this point, oh. I've done some smaller stuff. I'd done a few little things for Rat Queens. Mm-hmm. I did some stuff, independent work in Alberta here for bands and magazines and stuff like that. And done a few independent short comics, like 6 to 10 pages as well, that I just kind of did myself or did with somebody that I know. But yeah, this is the first big published work that I've ever done.
Wow, that must have been quite a change. I mean, you know, because you're seeing you're doing shorter works and suddenly you go to a graphic novel that's like 116 pages. That's quite a change.
It was a huge change, and definitely tested me. And I actually ended up leaving my job, my career that I'd been working on for like the last decade as a communications person, graphic designer, and all that, and went and worked on this full time.
Wow. So that's a change. I mean, you know, changing careers in order to be able to do it. It says that you're a cartoonist.
Yeah, you know, it's weird when you start doing the whole write and draw yourself and trying to pick which word you're supposed to use. Do I call myself a comic book writer and artist and writer? It seems like the preferred nomenclature is cartoonist, I guess.
Because I've heard people say it's a writer slash artist or an artist slash writer, and usually the one they prefer goes first. But I don't know, you know, based on this, because it hung together so nicely, I'm not sure which one you prefer. I mean, did you prefer the writing or did you prefer the art?
Oh, that's huge. I mean, the art was weird for me because I hadn't really drawn the way that this book is done in before. I actually kind of came up with a new way of working and tried something completely different. So it was a huge challenge that way, but I found it enjoyable. Writing for me was just physically less work and less, like, you know, temporal work. Mm-hmm. It took me about 3 or 4 months to finish my script, and it took me a year and a half to 2 years to finish the actual pages.
Okay, interesting. Because I was going to ask, because some people write as they go. You know, mm-hmm. you're drawing and then you write it, and of course you make changes as you go along if something occurs to you. Or some people go with script. Did you find yourself at making any changes as you went along, or was this basically you stuck to the script that you had put together? How did that go?
I stuck to the script, and at the same time that left me a ton of room to make a million changes, which is probably why it took so long. I would change stuff all the time while still adhering to the basic structure that I'd set out for myself. It's weird how much wiggle room you have to change things, I guess, when you write for yourself. And you know the writer's not going to get too mad at you if you draw something a little differently.
Now you get to decide what works because you're the creator on all these different ends.
Yeah, and it definitely, when you're drawing things, you find that certain things that I thought were going to be, you know, I had a pretty good sense of how things would work because, you know, I think of myself as an artist first, I guess, and a storyteller. But the writing portion of that, I think, comes after for me. So I think visually, but at the same time, there's still a lot of room to switch things up once it actually came time to work and get into to actually drawing out those panels and just finding that something didn't flow properly the way I thought it would when I was writing the script.
That's kind of the way I like to describe it as a storyteller, because I don't know if in your mind you make a difference when it comes all the way down to putting stuff on the page. You know, if there's a big difference between that, because to me, I think that you did a wonderful job of telling the story, and you know, and I, like I said, I couldn't tell. You know, sometimes with scripting, you can tell where things kind of go awry and stuff, but there's no going awry in yours. It really just moves along at a rapid clip, and it's lots and lots of surprises on the way, which I really liked. So it's a great little story. I think in America understand our neighbors to the north as well as we ought.
You know? Yeah, it's a niche book, isn't it, when you get into sort of the concept of it. But I think once you get into actually just sort of taking it as kind of a period crime piece, it's a little easier to jump into for somebody who's not as familiar with the terms and sites and all that.
Yeah, but we ought to be more familiar with it, in my humble opinion. I think that the way that you do it, you know, what was the date this took place, the slide?
This is going to sound terrible, but it's April something. I think it's 23rd, 1903. I know it's April. I know it's 20 something, and I know it's 1903. I just can't remember the specific date after 3 years of working on it.
Well, you're busy telling the story. You don't have to worry about the historical data. So that was kind of an, and I do want to talk about the art and the way you did things as an artist as opposed to, say, a writer. A writer would sit and explain a lot. There's this one I'm looking at right now. There's a page with Eve, and she's talking to the one guy, and they're literally looking daggers at each other, which is the expression. I love that, because as an artist, you're more likely to do that kind of a thing. You know, there would probably be, if a writer was involved, something different. And they would probably say the two looked at each other like as if there were daggers coming from their eyes or something. You know, you'd have to explain. You portray that, and that's part of the fun, I think, of this book, is that you do facial expressions, you do little things that add and tell the story a little more than say somebody who's used to writing novels or something suddenly has to, you know, work with a comic artist. It's different.
Yeah, I mean, when I got to this process, I was trying to think of ways to make the art stand out and be accessible to somebody who maybe wasn't into the whole comic scene and used to reading that particular language, which is how I think of comics as a language. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that language are those like little weird symbols that we always see in comic strips and comic books that, you know, that's kind of the pleasure of making comics, is being able to include weird little things like that, right? Mm-hmm. So trying to find a way for this book to be accessible, but also for it to be fun for me to work on for 2 years, mm-hmm. and including that weird kind of acidic colored little doodly stuff in the margins was definitely a big part of that for me.
Okay. So you mentioned something else that you did too, was the color. And there's a lot of interesting color choices in here too. I mean, I want to get into the characters and stuff too, but I'm interested in the color that you chose and stuff like that. You tend to use a little brighter colors. There's not so much shadowy stuff as there is, like, there's some shading going on, but it's not, you know, things aren't really in the dark a lot of the time. We get to see a lot of things happening, although you do some outdoor stuff, whether it's in the dark. But I like the way that you did the colors and made it sort of visually interesting for us to look at. I like those kinds of things.
Thanks. And that's, you know, kind of goes back to what I was just saying about my two kind of approaches here, which was one, to make it accessible to somebody who might not be used to dealing with kind of all the real heavy spot blacks that you get in a lot of North American comics, and also just trying to make it fun for me to work on. And when I'm thinking about doing a historical fiction kind of piece, I was really taken aback by the idea of using sepia tones for an entire book. So I decided really quickly that wasn't what I was going to do. Mm-hmm. And I actually pulled it back a lot from where I was testing at first, and it was super garish early on, and I had to pull it back a little bit because I had to remind myself that this is still a form of communication. Somebody needs to be able to look at it for, you know, an hour without their eyes bleeding. Still browns and stuff in there, but I tried to use, you know, the bright colors effectively to communicate certain things.
It's interesting because I've been talking with creators who have shall we say, gone to the past to find the really good stories. Because let's face it, in today's stuff, you've got the DNA testing and all this other stuff going on. And so mysteries and stuff aren't really mysteries as much as they were back in, say, in the era when this took place. Was that part of the appeal of it, was the fact that you got to tell a story that wasn't hindered by science in that pure sense?
You know, it didn't pop up when I was working on it, but, you know, getting that perspective from somebody else is actually really interesting, because I do think it lends itself to sort of the pace of this kind of story. I'm a huge, like, Agatha Christie fan, and, you know, even Murder, She Wrote, I was a fan of that when I was younger as well. But, like, there's a more tactile, just sort of, like, a character sort of either figuring things out or fumbling their way through it, as opposed to trying to science it out. And now that you're mentioning it, I think that is part of the appeal for me of placing this in a context where there aren't cell phones and, you know, cellular analysis as well.
So that was one thing in the X-Files. That was the first show I really noticed, when they had their phones with them constantly, so they could constantly communicate no matter where the two of them were in different places. They could talk to each other. In your book, they have to kind of be in the same place in order to be able to have a conversation, which is, you know, I think a lot of people today have lost some of that. So I really liked seeing that when we got to see people interact, you know, face to face. That was really enjoyable to see for a change.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it really changes the dynamic. You can't have a big emotional conversation over a cell phone or via texting, I guess, in this setting. You really have to be interacting with each other. And that actually let me do what my favorite part of doing comics is, which is kind of the characters' expressions and acting of the characters, which is really a lot of the fun for me, the facial expressions and really getting them to interact with each other in that way. So, yeah, I guess that's a benefit of the period setting.
I was going to bring up the fact that the facial expressions are really strong in this, that you get to, I mean, we don't need to see so-and-so was surprised, you know, in a box. We get to see the facial expression. Like Eve, for example, many of the times she's kind of surprised and unhappy. And we don't need to see, you know, like I said, we don't need a box to tell us she's surprised and unhappy. We get to see your artwork tell us that. And, you know, I wish more comics would do that, to be frank. That would be a pull a joke there, but yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those words that, like, now I can't hear it or see it anywhere, and it's a very prevalent word. yeah, no, that's that definitely is, I mean, my partner, my wife, make comics as well, and that was definitely one of the big things I learned from her, was how essential, I think, acting in your comic as an artist really is. You know, I might not be the strongest draft person or have the kind of, you know, raw skill of like a Sean Gordon Murphy or something like that. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping at least I can make up for it by making sure that the characters emote clearly and that's really legible to a reader. Mm-hmm. And so it's really gratifying to hear that you were able to pick up that and read that.
Now talk about dialogue though too, because as an artist, you're probably, you know, used to relying on facial expressions, but you actually got to do a lot of the dialogue. I mean, did this take some, you know, imagination on your part to figure out what these people would be saying at certain points to each other? Was there any kind of, because you did do some research on it, was there any kind of historical research that helped you understand what they would be doing at certain points?
I basically threw away any sort of attempt to try to make the language sound period appropriate. Mm-hmm. This goes in hand with the sepia thing we were talking about earlier, but it seemed boring to me to try to make somebody read something that was Victorian era speech. And honestly, there were places I wanted to research this story, but figuring out speech patterns wasn't one of them. So I guess maybe it's one of the spots where I struggled with a bit. But my bigger concern was trying to give the different characters, you know, distinct voices, and, you know, whether that's successful or not, it's impossible for me to tell at this point, but that was really where my concern was, more than period authenticity.
Well, once I got into it, I was into it. I enjoyed the story a lot. I thought it moved really well. Like I said, the dialogue, there's nothing that really makes me stumble when I come across the dialogue. So I really like that about that, because oftentimes when I get to a comic, I will struggle, especially if it's a period piece. They'll try to make it in a language that was in the day, like say in the early 1900s, and they used a lot of different terminology that we wouldn't understand today. But you do a good job of making the thing happen and making it relatable as far as people picking it up for the first time.
That was the hope. So it makes me feel good that that came through that way. But yeah, it's just that accessibility that I was talking about before, trying to, through, you know, the art and the language, make it easy for somebody to read. We're not in 1901 or 1903 anymore, so right. I didn't see much benefit to making somebody read, right. you know, sentence structure that looked like that.
Now let's talk about the characters a little bit. Let's talk about Eve, because the main character in this book is Eve. And of course, in that time period, women may not have been, you know, we're more used to in these days having a woman be a lead character. Mm-hmm. So in that time, this is one of those cases where I think when you updated the story and it was appropriate, because I think that her interaction or reaction with people is really interesting. I don't think you weren't untrue to that time period, but you also didn't make it that she was like somebody from today dealing with people. So I thought that was a real accomplishment to have a strong woman, but yet not necessarily, I don't know, someone that we would see today. So I liked that about the story. I thought that was real, real important to have that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's something I got a little bit of feedback from people on. The other character, the antagonist. Wow, this is terrible. I'm drawing a blank on my own antagonist name, but she's a woman as well, but she's a larger woman. She's drawn more masculinely. And I actually had some criticism from people who were annoyed that she was more masculine looking in representation, and also that she had a job as a mine kind of overseer, which they didn't think was historically accurate.
Is that Lucy?
Yeah, that's Lucy. Oh yeah. My God. Wow, this, I feel so terrible that I forgot one of my own characters' names.
Sometimes you're too close. You know, you spent a couple of years on it, so now you're a little separated
right.
from
I just
it.
I spent the last month and a bit getting a move taken care of too, and I really feel like disconnected from the work in a way that I haven't in years now.
Oh wow, because you know, to me, I really got into the characters. There's Oscar, there's Bobby, there's Gil, there's all these different characters in the town, and I noticed that there's and maybe this is a better thing up in Canada than it might be here. But, you know, to have a person of color be a police officer.
Oh, that one was with Gilbert. That's an interesting, because that character is definitely an homage to a gentleman by the last name of Ware, who was actually the first kind of cattle rancher we had in Alberta, who was actually an American that immigrated to Canada and did that. So there wasn't actually any Black Northwest Mounted Police, which was a precursor to the RCMP. There wasn't any members of that until, I believe, the 1960s.
Okay.
That was the first one in Canada. So that's one of those places where we were chatting about a little earlier, where like I did a bunch of research, but then in certain places, because of, you know, the same updates that I made to language and kind of style, I just chose to go with, you know, a society, I guess, that more reflects our modern time than to try to keep it looking the way that things look back then. And also through my research, I found that there were a lot more people that weren't necessarily white in these towns, mm-hmm. but they got lost in a lot of the history and story recording that happened back then because, well, frankly, of racism. They weren't really considered to be the important part of history, so they didn't get recorded.
Mm-hmm. And of course, there was another Black person who was in the bar at one point, which is you know, nice to see. So yeah, I guess on some levels you've got to do some allowance for the way we look at things now. If you had nothing but white males all over the place, it might get to be visually boring to look at. So you've got to do those things.
I don't think it accurately reflects the time period either. I think a lot of that actually got kind of, I don't know what the right term is, but kind of sieved out of history. And there these people were there. And I found a lot of that actually in my research, to go back to that topic from before. Mm-hmm. You know, I dropped certain accuracies, like trying to get the language correct, but I tried to pick up other things that I found in my research, like the actual presence of people that aren't kind of at the forefront of recorded history. Mm-hmm. So it just seemed like kind of course correcting to include those people. It didn't seem like a change made for modernity's sake, or whatever you'd say, but mm-hmm. actually just sort of more accurately reflecting the period.
Well, it's nice to see, because you got Mrs. Watson, who's in the store. You've got lots of different women and stuff involved, which is, to me, I think is a good thing. I, You know, if they fit the story and they work well with it, then I don't have a problem with it. I don't necessarily think everything has to be 100% historically accurate, you know, in that sense. So that's why I liked Mrs. Watson. She looked very much like a store owner would be, you know, in that time period. So I kind of liked that.
Because the store actually a historically accurate store. But, you know, there wasn't in my research anything that indicated which Watson in the family was actually running the store. So it seemed fine enough to put her in instead of, you know, the typical male counterpart.
Right, right. So that was good. So I like the way that the town developed and the way that we get to meet different people. And we don't necessarily see people who are, you know, there's people who walk by, for example, Eve is talking to a person of color, and these people walk by and don't talk to them, which is something that was kind of interesting. And I like the fact that, you know, you don't necessarily have to find all those good things, like I was just saying, but I like to see that these people were significant in the story, that they made things happen. And it moved the story along real nicely, and I really liked that.
Oh, thank you.
So as far as like the history of it, you know, I'm just sort of curious, is how much were you able to, you know, how accurate were you able to be and still get the story to be, you know, to be interesting to us? I mean, did you do a lot of that, or did you, you know, because I always, when I watch TV shows, you know, names have been changed to protect the innocent and kind of stuff like that. How much of that did you have to do?
As far as the characters, like any sort of named character in the story, with the exception of the druggist, Mrs. Watson, mm-hmm. Everyone is basically a fictitious character. Hmm. You know, Canada's history isn't that long ago, so there are a few reasons for choosing to do that, which is, you know, there could still be family members living in Alberta, and I didn't want to involve, you know, anybody's real identity in a made-up murder story that I come across as, like, inappropriate or garish. So it seemed just as easy to kind of make up characters. And then I could also make sure they were who I wanted them to be for the story. Like, Eve is just sort of a mess, and it might have been disrespectful to turn somebody's actual, you know, great grandfather or grandmother into that.
Yeah. Oh gosh, that'd be a disaster. Oh man, you don't want that to kind of stuff to happen.
No, I did sign for a few people pop by to let me know that their family had been in Frank when that happened. So I don't know, that choice I feel pretty good about.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Very good. A lot of the time it was just, it was talk. When the action happens, it's really, really, really important stuff. You know, sometimes in comics, you know, we get a lot of fighting and pushing and jumping and stuff like that. This story is much more of a dramatic one in that pure sense of the word. And like I said, your expressions really help propel that along real strongly. So I didn't notice until I got done with the end of it that there wasn't a lot of pushing and shoving and you know, typical superhero type stuff. I really liked that I didn't even catch that until I got to the end and said, no, wait a minute, that was more dramatic. So I liked that.
Well, thanks. Yeah, there's the inciting kind of incident at the beginning, which is some violence that happens sort of off panel. And I mean, in a story about something as deadly and dramatic as a landslide that kills, you know, over 100 people in a town that was maybe only about, you know, 1,000 people or less, it kind of seemed like leaving the focus on that kind of physical and violent event was kind of where I wanted that story to be, as opposed to, you know, kind of superficial and made up kind of pushing and shoving every now and again, just to try to keep things exciting. Mm-hmm. So hopefully it worked. I don't know.
Oh, I think it did. It gripped me. I was real interested. Now, I want to talk about the slide itself.
Sure.
Because, you know, the challenge you faced with that was to make it accurate and yet not be horrific, I suppose. Talk about illustrating that as, you know, a force of nature kind of thing. How did you, you know, approach that?
I think I took the, is it Alfred Hitchcock who said that, you know, whatever your person makes up in their mind is going to be significantly more dramatic and interesting or horrifying, I guess, in his case, than anything you could actually put on screen, or in my case, draw on a panel. So I just wanted to get the lead up and then show the aftermath and leave kind of the physical destruction to the reader themselves to kind of fill in the blanks.
Mm-hmm. Because when we see on here, there's a, all of a sudden there's, obviously we know something's going on. And then all of a sudden, as you're talking about the things, oh gosh, I don't want to spoil stuff, but you know, there's a, we can tell that something serious has happened because let's just say things go dark.
And yeah, and you're left with a bit of confusion about what's going on. And I really wanted to pull the reader into a sense of confusion that might be kind of an analog with of what somebody might be going through in a similar, like in a real life event of that scope or whatever. Mm-hmm. So really draw that feeling of like not really clearly understanding for a bit what's happened. Mm-hmm. I really felt like that's what the character Viv would be going through is, you know, one second you're doing one thing and then the next second you're something else completely has happened. And I think that confusion is kind of an important part of that sort of event.
I like that a lot because all of a sudden, you know, especially, you know, I always refer to the comics medium and say, we don't expect that. You know, we would expect all kinds of stuff and see rubble everywhere and all kinds of stuff. And for you to approach that from, I think, a simpler point of view made it more horrific to me. I mean, you know, we knowing that this had to do with the slide, and I, all of a sudden I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, are these people still alive? Who's still alive? Who survived? Because we don't know right away.
No.
And I like that about that, that we had to keep going to discover what has happened.
Yeah, and I think it makes that... I guess, is it a spoiler to say that the town gets crushed? Because, I mean, it's sort of there in the premise, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned it, I think. Yeah, I think it's already in there, so we know that.
So we get to that point where you finally get the sort of double-page, you know, spread of what's happened. I think it just makes it a little bit more effective because you haven't seen, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 pages of that already.
Yeah, it's really something. I really, you know, I like that. Another thing that gets me is we don't experience, except for like when hurricanes come or other things like that, we don't get a lot of natural disasters in our lives anymore. I mean, you know, some things will happen, but not like this. This was something that was unexpected, you know, and so when they have to deal with it, you know, I could relate to these people. I said, oh my gosh, look what's happened to these people.
It's sudden, it's violent, and it's kind of without explanation. And in a lot of ways, it's a curveball for the story. It takes where the story was going and basically tells the reader that like this other thing happened and made what was happening before irrelevant, which, you know, could go either way. It could either make a reader feel dissatisfied that this thing that I'd asked them to invest in wasn't paid off in exactly the way they might've expected. But I'm hoping for most people, they understood the attempt there to, to kind of impose that sense of devastation onto the story as well and understand how that impacts people's lives.
It's pretty amazing. Now, I do have to say, without spoiling something, you ended this book the way I thought it was going to start.
Yeah.
Let's just say. And I when I got to that, I was like, oh, man, you've gone the exact opposite way I thought you were going to go. I thought that was pretty interesting. So I liked the artistic choice in that. I thought that was really great fun to see that, you know, and I don't want to spoil it because I want people to get the full effect of that when they read it. But I like that.
I really appreciate that. I hate to keep using the word gratifying, but I can't think of a better word. It just makes me feel good that, you know, the thing that you tried to do was, I guess, read in the way that you were hoping somebody might experience it.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you.
Well, it was good. I like the little description about Frank at the end. You have like a couple paragraphs about Frank to describe that. And it's interesting to know that the town as it was at that point does not exist any longer. I find that really, really fascinating. Because we're not used to that, you know. And in modern times, towns are here forever, you know. But to see a town that actually didn't survive is really something that's kind of gripping stuff.
Yeah, and it, you know, it suffers under its own ambition and kind of, you know, it goes back to its ways. It just bounces back immediately. But then, you know, that's sort of suggested in the story, and I hope it comes through, that it's possibly the reason that the accident happens, that the tragedy happens is from the kind of ambitious approach to what they were doing and kind of a lack of care for how they were doing it and how that, you know, ends up for the town. It's exploited until the resources are gone, and then the town goes as well.
So we don't.
It's an interesting sort of
yeah.
sort of way of thinking about it.
Because it's funny because, you know, because today, if a town, let's say a coal mining town, let's say, for example, would, you know, because I grew up in a coal mining part in northeastern Pennsylvania.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I grew up in Scranton, Wilkes-Barre area. And
do they still mine there today, Wayne?
No, that's the interesting thing. What they do is they find another kind of thing to live on. They don't right. do that anymore. They go into something else. It's such a surprise to me that town doesn't exist any longer in its original form. Because, you know, everywhere I've ever been and I've seen a town, they always, if something happens to their type of income, let's say it's, you know, tourism or something like that, the tourism goes away, they go and do other stuff and make other things yeah. happen.
I guess the biggest example we have, like, in more modern history is Detroit's attempt to reinvent itself after the decline of auto manufacturing
yep.
and their struggle with that. But, yeah, they're still around, and you're right. Now we'd send aid and probably save the town or try to do that. But I guess it also harkens to sort of the intent of Frank when it was started by Henry Frank, which was to get rich and get out. And if you're an Albertan, that's a theme or a concept that we're all very familiar with. We're all very used to the idea of people coming to our province in particular for oil now, and they're here to work and make money, and then they're here and then they're gone. So it's like, you know, what's the impetus to keep a place like Frank going once the money's gone?
So people,
I guess there was one for a lot of people.
So people are still doing that kind of thing? I'm surprised to hear that people are going there for oil now and doing the same kind of thing that they did in this story.
I mean, yeah, Alberta's primary industry is oil. And so we still have people coming from, you know, we've just kind of come out on the other side of a pretty deep recession for the province that we're not used to. But yeah, we definitely in our history have had lots of people moving here from other parts of the country to, you know, pop into one of our industrial towns and kind of make money and then get out. They're not planning on staying and putting down roots. So it's still a thing that we are kind of grappling with, and the analog of that, I think, is part of what intrigued me about the whole setting of Frank when I was working on this, was kind of just like, oh, we have a similar situation going on now. Like, this isn't a judgment thing, it's just sort of me noticing a pattern where, you know, it's not on the same scale, obviously. Like, cities like where I live in Calgary, and our second largest city in the province is Edmonton, like, they're not going anywhere, even if the oil industry at some point finally does end and we move on to other things. But it was just seeing that kind of similar pattern and that relationship with these resources and our way of using them that was fascinating to me.
See, someone like me, I don't know any of that stuff. So I was glad to be able to talk to you and find that out, because I'm kind of actually surprised that continues to go on, because one would think, you know, we would learn from the past and not allow those things to go on.
Yeah, it's interesting when we don't learn from the past and then we stop and take a look and we realize there's a lot of things we do, I think, especially in, you know, to use the term Western society, that we kind of forget to step back and look at that we've done it before and it didn't have great results.
Oh, wow.
So I find the patterns interesting at the very least, to not get into, you know, more overtly political discussion about, you know, Canada's, you know, resource economies and stuff like that. Right. I just find seeing those similar patterns interesting, and I was hoping that would, you know, resonate with other Albertans specifically.
See, I need to know more of this stuff. This is why I'm glad I got to read it, because I didn't know any of this stuff about that. And I've read other books. There was one that was talked about the Constitution, I think it was called, or something, which means different things to you guys than it does to us.
Right. And we don't have that same kind of history of the battle for independence and building a constitution and the adherence to the Constitution the way you do.
Right. It's very different. So I'm always interested in learning other things. That was one of the things that I loved, the getting to understand that time in your country and in Canada. And I was interested to find out all these different things. Boy, it's really amazing stuff. It's just, you know, I wish we knew more about you guys. I wish we understood your you know, your history more than we do. Because, you know, as Americans, I hate to say it, we tend to focus on us.
I mean, we've got a lot going on, so I think most Canadians would find that understandable.
Well, I still think we would do better if we, you know, we could learn things from what you guys have gone through.
At the very least, we have some interesting stories that you might not have, you know, heard a million times already, since the kind of media cycle likes to churn things over a lot.
Yeah.
At least we have some unique stories that you haven't heard yet.
Right. It was the Loxley stories. There was like two of them, I think, that I read that was really educational to me. I came away really understanding so much more about why, you know, what the focus is more in Canada than it is here in America because of what you guys had experienced. So I think is the same kind of story. I mean, you know, we more of us down here need to be reading this so we can be aware of this kind of stuff.
I mean, if this book gets into somebody's hands and makes them even like a little bit more interested in finding out more about this specific event or, you know, Alberta's history or Canada's history, I would consider that a huge success.
Well, it got me interested, I have to say. It rekindled that interest that I had with the Loxleys, which was a great book that I think Alan Grant wrote
long back.
It was such a great – I think it was two of them, and I really enjoyed those a lot. And I got to get back into more of this stuff. Speaking of which, now that you've completed this book and I really enjoyed it, are there other things you're working on that we should be aware of?
I am. I've decided to try something completely different, and I've decided to try to write a regular prose novel. Mm. So that's what I'm working on right now. I don't know. I won't get too much into it, but it's okay. If you've ever heard of the Red Wall series before, by the British writer Brian Jacks, mm-hmm. It's this great like 40 novels spanning series of books about this kind of like medievalish abbey in the UK, in a fictitious UK that's kind of has all these adventures going on with these little animals that kind of stand in for humans in that case. So I'm trying to do something very much inspired by that, but you know, sticking with my own tropes, set in Alberta, in like a fictitious version of Alberta, and you know, doing all that kind of stuff that I try to draw some parallels to different things that happen here and kind of make it uniquely us, but also kind of accessible to other people. So yeah, writing a book just for a change of pace. Want to see if I can do that next.
Cool. I have to get a hold of that because based on how much I enjoyed this one, I really want to get that one too, because that would be fun to experience and get to do that. So
if I'm finished, I'll definitely send you a copy.
Oh, that'd be great, because I'd love to be able to see it, because I'm convinced we're just not exposed to enough of each other's histories and experiences that we would have a lot more understanding if we could do that. I really believe that.
I think that's a really great sentiment.
I wanted to mention at the very end of on the back page, you've got a recommendation from, of all people, Brian K. Vaughan from Saga, yeah. Which, as you know,
his favor. That's the only one I get.
Oh, well, you know, hey, that's good stuff. Let me read it. It says, Ben Rankle's Frank is a timeless tale of money, murder, and Mother Nature, powerfully told and vibrantly illustrated. Highly recommended for all fans of historical dramas. So I have to second that one. That was a great read. I really enjoyed that. So, man, I hope you get to do more of these things. I doubt there'll be a Frank 2, but
I kind of left a little bit of an opening for the character to go on if I ever wanted to do Eve Lee taking on a different mystery. But we'll see. I like the character, but I think she might have had a complete journey here already.
Okay, well, you know, if the right opportunity presents itself, maybe you'll get a chance to take Eve on another journey. But it was a great read. I learned a lot, and I experienced something new, which I always love when I get to read a book and read a comic. It's going places I haven't been before, and variety is just something that I cherish. And so I thought Frank was really one of those books that I'm really glad I got to experience and enjoy.
Well, Wayne, that's super kind of you, and I am greatly thankful for you taking the time to chat with me.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
for this episode. Until next time, keep reading your comics.